I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Thank you for inviting me to give a talk today. Yes?
We don't have any amplifications.
Talk big. Okay. If you can't hear me, because you're kind of spread out, I will try and talk so you can all hear me. If you can't, just raise your hand. And if you raise your hand, I might call on you to say something. Be careful. So the subject that I wanted to talk about today, and I want to have a little dialogue as we go along too, if it seems appropriate. The subject is have no fear. And it's one that I've been pondering for some time. Really, pretty much all the time during my career as a Zen Buddhist practitioner. And it comes up once in a while, still. And I work on it, and I observe it, and I investigate it, and then it disappears. But why it came up for me recently is that I was with Mushin at a teacher's study group up at Great Vow, and one of the exercises that we did was Hogan, who's one of the abbots at Great Vow, had us did a guided meditation with us about, we find out that we're going to die in a pretty short time, say a month. And, you know, we kind of walk that through, and all of a sudden, then he says, what would you teach? What would you pass on to other people if you knew that was happening? And so we had to get together and write each individually what it was. And I was really surprised, because what came up for me was I would want to teach people, have no fear. And so I was like, well, if that's what I would teach if I only had 30 days to live, why don't I start talking about it now? So that's how it came up for me recently. And then I started thinking more about it. What does this mean, have no fear? It's something that comes from Buddha's teachings. We hear it all the time. It's in our chants. But I didn't have a lot of context for it. But all of a sudden, when I started opening up to it, a lot of memories came back, and context and content came back with that. I remember during one of my very first long sessions or retreats up at Great Vow, I had this huge fear reaction during a sitting period. We were all, you know, it's all quiet. It's kind of a lazy afternoon. Nothing's going on. And all of a sudden, there was a little knock, just like something hitting, just like that. That's all. And I was like in this huge alert fear reaction. It was like as if my senses, I had like antennas that went out through the whole room. I was totally alert and awake and aware. It's very interesting. In fact, I was on like this complete high alert. But, you know, we're all just silently sitting there. It's like nothing to be really afraid of. It was like I'm in the middle of it, but I'm not, there's nothing really out there to be afraid of. So I really noticed my hearing was very acute and my muscles were all ready to move, run, whatever I needed to do. So I used the practice that we have of following the breath to calm myself down. I could lower my anxiety level bit by bit. And just sit through it and realize that this was something that came from within and not from without. And it was something that, with the practice, could be diminished and could be worked with. And so I remember I went to Sanzen, and then I wasn't even sure if I could go back into the Zendo, but I could. And from that experience, after Sesshin was over, I was just, I had a lot of joy, and I was pretty ecstatic and excited. because I could see how this practice could help us calm whatever came, and that whatever came up, I would have no fear. I could have no fear about. I could be fearless about what arises during practice. And so I remember that first session, and I told people, "Don't give up. Don't give up. Keep practicing. Keep practicing, because this practice is wonderful. It's a great relief to find a practice where you can dive deep and not be consumed by what you find there." And that was my first beginnings with have no fear. So, what are the fears that we have? I had this little conversation this morning with the friends I'm staying with, and my friend said, "Oh, I don't have any fears." I said, "So, really, let's talk." And so, she goes, "No." And when we talked about it, she goes, "I said, well, you just told me that you're afraid that the furnace at your mother's house was going to quit working, and then she'd freeze." She says, "Oh well, that no, I'm not. I'm proactive. I'm proactive, and I do so I alleviate my fears." Well, and so I started thinking about that, and she said, "Yeah, like you can do as much as you can to not have bad things happen, and then you have to accept what happens." So as this made me think that yeah, there's things that we can do in our lives. We can exercise. We can, you know, put new tires on our cars. We can do all kinds of things, put roofs on our houses to help alleviate certain kinds of fears. But what is the kind of fear that our practice helps us with? That's what I'm really interested in. So I thought one of the things we could look at first was what are all the words that mean fear that we use? So in the dictionary, there's lots. There's terror, and maybe you can think of something, fright, fearfulness, horror, alarm, panic, agitation, trepidation, dread, consternation, dismay, distress, anxiety, worry, angst, unease, uneasiness, apprehension, apprehensiveness. We use it all the time. Fear is pretty embedded in our psyches, so to speak. I could go on. Nerves, forbearing, foreboding, the creeps, I like that one. Shivers, the willies, the heebie-jeebies. Who uses that anymore? I have the heebie-jeebies.
What about just being scared?
Just being scared. Is that on here? I don't see it on here. Just being scared. What else? Any others that come up for you? Dread.
Intimidated.
Good. Yeah. So, and we all have our own kind of understanding of what that means and what it feels like in the body. So we could say that fear is on a continuum from unease to horror or terror. We could really delve into the makeup of fear and its purpose, why we have fear. I mean, it's not a total negative thing. Of course, we have, maybe fear is useful. Otherwise, we may not put our seatbelts on, or we might walk out in the middle of the street, or all kinds of things. So fear itself has its purpose. But lots of times we get wrapped up in fear so much that it prevents us from doing what we are here to do, just to live. A lot of times we all talk about we have fear of death, but oftentimes we have just as much fear of living. So our own practice, our personal practice, and our own experience is what will lead us to this idea of no fear, and perhaps even beyond no fear. So we can sit without being fearful, but fear may come up. We can try and live a life without being fearful, but fear may come up during life. And then perhaps when it comes to die, we may be able to face death without fear. Exploring fear, digging far into below fear, understanding your own personal fear, maybe it's collective fear, and the fear we face, we can be compassionate about fear, compassionate to ourselves and to others. Those are all ways that we can transform this idea of fear. So, I want to talk a little bit about in a lot of the statues of Buddha, they have a mudra, hand mudra, symbolic mudra, which means have no fear. And so if you see we have a statue at Heart of Wisdom, and the Buddha has his hand in this form. And it means it's welcoming too, that come into this place with no fear, with a peaceful mind. Sometimes, so you can remember, some ways to remember and to look at this is that each of the fingers has a quality that we might want to cultivate. And this is called abhaya. Abhaya means fearlessness, fearless. So the things that we may want to investigate further having to do with fear are faith, diligence, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Those are five qualities to look at with fear. Have no fear. Faith. So it's just easy way to remember. And we, in Buddhism, we all like lots of lists. So faith, diligence, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Those qualities are enough you can really dive into fear and look at them through being diligent in your practice, having faith in this path, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, allowing knowledge that's beyond our own knowledge to come through. We could also look at this five as the five precepts. It's another way we can really dive into fear, if fear is something you'd like to investigate more, through the five precepts. Not to kill, but to cherish all life. Not to lie, but to speak the truth. Not to misuse sexual energy. Not to steal. Oh, I think I got mixed up. Steal. And not to misuse drugs and alcohol, but keep the mind free. Clear. So you can just imagine looking at each one of those with fear. What is it with fear that you are protecting? And how did the five precepts play into that? The precepts can unfold deeper and deeper. And it will allow you to touch deeply into your fears and ways to investigate them. So we can always look a little bit more about what fear is. We fear, I'd like to ask you to throw out what are things that people fear these days. One, I'll start with not being successful, not getting what you want, not having relationships that you want, not having the material goods that you want. And then once you have them, we fear losing them. So what kinds of things come up to your mind about fear?
I got one.
Okay.
A quote from Ezra Beda. We are all walking around on thin ice, and we are all one doctor's visit away from falling through the thin ice into the icy water.
Okay. So what does that mean in your words?
That means I'm afraid of illness, infirmity, sickness, being disabled.
Okay. Those are big ones, and we're all headed towards in that direction eventually. The young people, I think young people don't worry about it because, it's too far away. But once you get a little bit closer, it starts saying, oh, yeah, this is what happens as you get old. There are infirmities, there are disabilities, there's ill health, there's death. That's why we, lots of times, we'll repeat the five remembrances. So it keeps us right there. What else? What are the fears? What comes to mind? What are you fearful of? Oh.
Speak up.
Yeah, I can tell. It's a group that doesn't have any fears.
Rising sea levels.
Say that again?
Rising sea levels.
Rising sea levels, okay. The fear of what's happening with all this climate change. And I saw, it's not rising sea levels, it's the opposite. In Somalia, they are like so much drought that they can't live anymore the way they did. It's just completely changed for them, yeah. So fear of what's happening in the world because of the effects of how we live. Yeah, that's a good one.
I have a fear of making a mistake.
Yes,
that's... And regretting it a long time.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say, too. Fear of making a wrong decision.
Fear of making a wrong decision, yeah. That's a very common and very... And that's the one that keeps us from really living.
Yeah, I call it being paralyzed by choice. Like, you look at whatever you're going to decide, there's all these choices, and you're just so afraid you're going to make the wrong one that you don't do anything.
Yes. And so it keeps us frozen. Mm-hmm. So looking, that's a great, almost like a koan to look in to for yourself. We have a very interesting... You're pointing to somebody. Or you have
no,
one.
I was going to point to myself.
I want to say one thing first, but we have an interesting kind of... Our culture is we don't appreciate failure very much. And so we're afraid to fail. But we learn from failure. So failure is a very important part of life. If we didn't fail when we were kids and trying to walk, we would have never walked. So, but we get to a point where then we say, okay... No more failure. We go to school or something happens. I don't know. But we were all afraid of failure. But failure is so important. And to be able to let go of that and say, oh, this talk might just be a failure. But I could learn something from it.
Well, just to comment on that, and then I'll share a few that I have, is it's really essential. We talk a lot about discernment.
Uh-huh.
And learning how to sharpen our discernment of what is the true situation, what we are truly looking at. And failure is a major ingredient in learning how to discern the true situation. Because when things don't work, we learn a lot about why doesn't it work, what's off base in how we're thinking about a situation.
Right.
My fear is much more collective, which is the increasing and expanding reactivity, hatred, and ignorance in our culture. That's taking over the political and social media sphere. And being living in a country, in a world, where there's no human appeal. That's,
yes.
That's what it comes down to,
mm-hmm.
for me. That's
yeah.
the thing that keeps me up at night.
Yes. So I can tell you what Thich Nhat Hanh says about that. And Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, lived through the Vietnam War in his country and saw lots and lots of people die. And it was very destructive. So you can imagine, just imagine if we were in a civil war here in this country, how you would, it's just almost an unimaginable what would happen, how we would react or what we would do. We just don't know. But having a strong practice, I can guarantee will help you. Taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha will help you in these times of great fear and unrest and chaos, what we would think of as chaos. So he says, once we touch the ground of our being, once we touch God or Nirvana, we also receive the gift of no non-fear. Non-fear is the basis of true happiness. The greatest gift we can offer others is our non-fear. Living deeply every moment of our life, touching the deepest part of our being, This is the practice of prajna, paramita. He's talking particularly this paramita. What we can do, basically, is what we can do, is to be happy in our lives, to understand and touch non-fear, and then do what we can do. Because lots of times, we aren't particularly effective. But we still have to keep going and trying and keep working. So when we see the world out there all kind of falling apart, our what we can do is something with ourselves. And we can influence people right here. And we can keep on looking and being active in the way that we can see is the best use of our energy, our life energy. Maybe you have some other to add to that.
I would say the same thing in my own words.
Yeah, good. Exactly.
Moment by moment, presence.
So a couple other things that we can think about. I don't want to make sure our time. Can't quite see that clock.
Ask Shishin. He's
11:25.
And we go to.
He's the man.
He's the man. You'll tell me. You go.
We have some more tech.
Yeah. So what are we afraid of? And this is one of my thoughts, is untangling our own stories and realizing that we're just impermanent beings lost in the great mystery, melting into the cosmos. How can we be fearless? Fearlessness also comes from benevolence and goodwill in the face of whatever oppresses you. It's hard. You are afraid, but instead of fighting what faces you, you embrace it and accept it. You develop loving kindness as a direct antidote to fear. There was a kind of famous picture of the Buddha meditating under the Bodhi tree, and it's before he reaches enlightenment, and there's all kinds of arrows coming at him, and he has kind of a shield of benevolence, and so the arrows hit that and fall down, and you know, it's a very, it's got all kinds of temptations, which is, you know, kind of a myth story throughout all different religions. But he's tempted by beautiful women, and he's tempted by money and greed and all these different things. And people are shooting arrows at him, and he just sits there. And his benevolence gives him a shield for this. That's how he expresses his fearlessness. His loving kindness is shining out from him. His fearlessness is in his face, is in the face of what is confronting him, either from within or from without. So lots of what we face is from within. So our own benevolence is actually the protection that renders what we may call enemies impotent. So in the image of the Buddha, these spears and arrows were reflected off of him. So how do we reflect spears and arrows throughout our day? So one of the ways that we do this is through our own mindfulness, and mindfulness of what is actually happening, and not just wandering through the days with our scattered energy frantically going in all directions, but being mindful of our environment and where we are and what we're doing and what we're saying, working on being less reactive, being able to step back when things are arrows and are thrown at us, that we don't have to react in kind. Being somewhat of a detached observer, when you can actually see fear arising, that's the beginning steps. But you still may get entangled in it. It's kind of like when anger rises, it comes fast. So we don't really try to push away this idea of fear, because that'll just entangle us more. But we really let it arise and notice it. Oh, this is fear. Oh, this is fear. This is fear. It's really important to be able to feel fear in your body. Does it start in your stomach? Is it your throat gets tight? Do you react? How is your what is your reaction? Simply observing it and then letting it, giving yourself some space so you don't have to react with a habitual pattern. Say, oh, I'm fearful because that's the question. Why am I fearful? What is it? What is it behind this? What am I trying to protect? What am I doing? One of the other remedies for fear is the metta practice. How to free, this is one of the ways that the Buddha taught us how to be free from fear. So, do you do metta practice here?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good, because I think metta practice is one of the most amazing practices that you can do. And you can do it anytime. It's great. You can do it while you're waiting in line, when you're waiting in the at the stop sign, or the not stop sign, you have to go really fast, but but a red light, the train, if the train is going by, it calms you down. Well, the words I use is, may I be free of suffering, may I be free of fear and anxiety, may I be at ease, may I be happy, and then that same thing outward to others. I like the idea that that's the first thing I do in the morning. First thing I try to do when I wake up in the morning, as soon as I become conscious, is repeat the metta sutra. Well, not the whole sutra, but just those metta phrases. Fearlessness also comes from benevolence and goodwill in the face of whatever oppresses you. So instead of fighting back, you embrace it and accept it. So loving kindness can be a direct antidote to fear. Another one is this idea of taking refuge in the three treasures, three jewels. It's also a remedy for fear is our refuge in Buddha nature. So taking refuge in our own Buddha nature is a strong remedy for fear. If you understand your Buddha nature, the concept of oneness with all beings, then there's no reason for fear. So I would say, take refuge in this practice. So when you have a decision to make, many times it's good. A good way to go about this is to sit with it and see what comes up. See which way it tells you to go without your agenda being there, just allowing it to arise. Taking refuge in the practice when you feel like the slings and arrows of everyday life are just too much for you. Then instead of taking refuge in something else, like going to the movies, it's not always bad, but take refuge in the practice. Sit down for a while. Let yourself relax and be at ease in the practice. Make it your go-to default action, taking refuge in the practice when you are angry or fearful. Letting that fear subside while you sit. I had another little story I wanted to tell about fear, and this was up at Great Val. How much time?
You probably can tell the story.
Tell the story. That would be good. This is during work practice. I always think work practice is a good, it always brings out something about my practice. I don't know if everybody has that experience, but there's always some kind of analogy or something that's very moving about work practice. So my work practice this time was to dig up the dahlias and for the winter and, you know, store them someplace. Well, this seemed like a pretty simple thing. But what happened was they said, oh, there's chicken wire underneath the dahlias, so you have to dig those up. And I said, okay, I probably can do that. And so I started digging, and what had happened was that the dahlias had grown all in the chicken wire. And and then it said, well, the reason we put that chicken wire down was to protect the dahlias from the rats, because there were rats who were digging in and coming up and eating the dahlia roots and the tubers. And all of a sudden, I just felt very compelled to kind of save these dahlias. And as soon as I was able to, I got some tin snips, and I went over and I dug them all up. And it was like I was part of the dahlias themselves. These dahlias had been protected by the chicken wire, but then when they grew, the chicken wire then hampered their growth. And so we could see how that might really be the same thing in our lives. We protect ourselves so that we're not disappointed, or we protect ourselves for a lot of different reasons. But then it hampers our growth. We can't grow anymore. But we want to grow, so we're all growing in the chicken wire, and it's constricting us. I got some wire snips, and I pulled it all apart, and it was like this wonderful thing, because then I freed the dahlias. I freed myself and from this constriction of protection. They were fine. For a long time, when I was doing this, I'd just think, oh, we just should throw these away. But no, they're all good. They're great. So what I learned from that was, look at your own, how do you keep yourself protected so much that you really don't allow yourself to grow and be part of life, or to look deeply into the practice deeply into our practice, and really go forth wholeheartedly and in a genuine way without fear. So go forward with no fear, but keep practicing. Thank you.
So we can all say, may the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
Please turn to page 5 of your chant book, located under the cushion.